When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to In My Heart, a podcast truly about all of the things in my heart and finding our freedoms.
I'm your host, Heather Thompson, and I'm thrilled to be back this week with my next guest, Melody Lomboy-Lowe. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Melody. While she was born and raised in Southern California, she didn't have your classic childhood that we would all think about of a wonderful childhood raised in Southern California. I'm sure there was some wonderful parts, but diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia at age 6 is Melody's story, and that's how we're going to begin. She's been a cancer warrior ever since. She was given a 50% chance of survival rate at her childhood age of 6 years old. She was treated at the City of Hope, a place special in my heart we'll get to later, but she was treated until the age of 9. Being a survivor at a time when not many survived, Melody set on a course to help newly diagnosed cancer patients. At a young age, she spoke nationally for various cancer charities, including the City of Hope, giving an award for the City of Hope even at a young age, and helping to raise money for cancer research. Well, Melody, in her beautiful years of life, has continued her philanthropic endeavors into adulthood and has authored 2 books, which we're going to talk about. One is about to launch, and we're really excited about that. She's raised money for various cancer organizations, and she was also a double major in sociology and art history. So, motivated by her cancer experience to live a full life, Melody stays very active in her community and as a volunteer. And I wanted her to have a moment on this podcast because I think there's something to be said about celebrating life and surviving life. Melody, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me, Heather.
I'm so thrilled to have you. I mean, let's just talk about this because one of the things that I think people don't ever understand, I myself had this experience and I know stories of children with any type of illness, you know, namely childhood cancer, is one of those moments that we all like take a breath when we watch the commercial on television, when we see something for the City of Hope, when we see something for St. Jude's, and we all take pause and we just can't even fathom what that's like for the parent, but let alone for the child. So I'm really so interested to take a new perspective because I've always been able to speak a little bit and be an advocate for my child and some of his health struggles. But now as an adult, you can speak a little bit from the child's perspective.
Right. Growing up that way, I don't know life without cancer. So, I mean, I don't have very many memories before being diagnosed, but being faced with death at such a young age kind of makes you grow up super fast. And now as a mom, I realize what my mom went through. You know, as a kid, it was just like, you know, this is what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to go to the hospital. I'm supposed to take this medication. And if I want to live, I have to have a positive attitude. And I had all this list of things I needed to do as a kid. It was just go, go, go. And then now as an adult, every time my kids have turned, I have 3 sons. When they turn 6, I've always been afraid. Like, I check their lymph nodes. I'm like really worried about them. So now I realize that cancer really affects the entire family. You know, it was so about me all the time as a kid, but now that I'm a parent, I realize it's the siblings are affected, the parents are affected. So it really does challenge an entire group of people. So that's what I'm trying to share with people is that, you know, cancer isn't just about the patient. It's about everybody.
It is about everybody. And we can say that with, you know, pretty much any illness that a family faces, you know, whether it's a child, which I really do want to focus on, obviously, with you today, or whether it's another loved one, a family member, like we all take some sort of hit when it comes to that. But let's really talk about what it's like to be a child and what it's like to be the parent of a child who is given a potential death sentence versus a potential life sentence, right? It's like you potentially could be better, but you could maybe not, you know? And that was something that I, as a parent, was faced with. And I remember many parents saying to me, you know, oh my God, you're a hero. How did you do that? And I said, whoa, I am no hero. I have my kid. Let's talk to the parents who didn't come out on the other side the way I did. And I mean, my voice quivers just thinking about it. So can we talk a little bit about how it really formed you as an individual to, you know, who you became because of those challenges early on in life? I call them, my friend Eric Weinmayer, who's a blind athlete, he calls it the adversity advantage, right? There is some sort of advantage, I think, that we can cultivate from this type of, you know, survival, if you will. That I want to put on the shelf. And I also want to talk about how do you become that person, because there has to be pillars of strength in your world that sets you up on a foundation for success.
Yes, absolutely. You know, you're forced to live every day. So it's like my whole mission is to celebrate life. And it has been that since I was diagnosed. You're a survivor right away. You know, the minute you find out that you have cancer and you're living day to day to day, you're a survivor. My mother and father didn't allow me to be the sick patient. They continued my life. So I stayed on a swim team. And even on days that I was sick, I would go and watch my friends swim, even though I couldn't get into the water and swim with them. So some days I would go to City of Hope, have a bone marrow aspiration, get chemotherapy in my spine, go watch my friends swim. Sometimes the next day, I'd be in a race. So my parents just really wanted me to have that normal childhood, as well as, you know, realizing where my strength was and what my ability was. So I'm so happy that they continued that celebration of life. And I was diagnosed in September, and I went into remission in November, the Sunday before Thanksgiving. So the Sunday before Thanksgiving has become our celebration of life. And every year we have a gathering of people that supported us and people, you know, just everyone in our lives that had something, people that delivered food to my parents, people that visited me in the hospital. I mean, I had friends that would wrap little gifts for me. And every day that I was in the hospital, I'd have something to open. So we have like a great support team. So those are my pillars. I think my parents and my sister and everybody that spent nights in the hospital with me, those were the people that really lifted me up and gave me an example of what it's like to live life. And I think that being faced with death so young, I feel like now I'm in my 40s. So I have friends that are like, oh, I'm 40. I'm not putting up with that anymore. I'm not going to have negative people in my life anymore. I never put up with it. Right. I never had that. You know, I don't have time for that because life is too precious. So I surround myself with women like you that celebrate life and celebrate other women and lift people up. I don't have time for people that will bring you down at all. It's just, you know, life's too short.
Oh my God. It's just like, I have a million different, like, you know, chills in my veins. On every point that you made, I had a chill ran through my vein because, you know, we as parents have to set our children up for this world, right? And oftentimes we have children that are not set up for the world. And the world is not, you know, kind. It's generally, yes, it's kind. Don't anyone get too mad at me. Yes, it's kind on one hand. But it's not really set up for people with, you know, handicap, people with disabilities. You know, obviously we're having a big surgence of the importance of the minority discussion in this world, right? So the world is not set up to be a warm, caring, giving place. You know what I mean? We almost have to set ourselves up for that. So when you have a child that's disadvantaged, like what your parents did was, I mean, swimming is a hard sport. I mean, you're still swimming to this day. They actually gave you a gift. They had to show up for you. You know, they had to get you up out of bed when you didn't feel good. And they had to say, we're going to put on your swimsuit and we're going to go sit on the bench if you can't swim today. Or we're going to put you in the water and you're going to swim today because you're able to. And they showed you that life is hard, you know, and that it's tough and that you got to be tough sometimes to get through life. And that's a lesson that we all have to take with us, because every day, whether you have an illness, you're battling any type of challenge, it's hard to get the hell up sometimes. And it's hard to get up just to sit on the bench, right? Because showing up is 50% of it, right? And then to actually get in the water and to actually compete swimming while you were going through bone marrow transplants and chemotherapy. I mean, what you said at the beginning was, I just didn't know life any other way. And so we look at the challenge and we say, wow, you know, that was just their MO. That was their existence. That's their modus operandi, how they understood how to manage life. What about the days when you felt like you could look to your right or you could look to your left and they didn't have it as hard over there? And, you know, they had it a lot easier, in fact, over there. How did that motivate you or not sometimes as a child?
When I was diagnosed, a lot of kids were not surviving.
Yeah.
So I was already ahead just surviving the day.
Yeah.
Just being able to get up and walk around. I had friends that couldn't get out of bed. So I always felt like I was a little bit ahead all the time because I had a little bit more health than some of the other kids around me. But I went to this camp for kids with cancer. There I saw survivors for the first time. Yeah. So seeing survivors gave me hope.
Yeah.
So I guess like looking to my right was seeing these people that were 16, 17 years old and had survived the exact same diagnosis that I had.
Yes.
Having that as an inspiration and seeing them look healthy and having fun. And, you know, the first time I went to camp, I was very sick. I was 7 years old. So I was right in the middle of chemotherapy, mm-hmm. barely had any hair. Very, very sick. And I got to see kids that were running around and riding horses and playing soccer. And it was almost like I had that goal of being that kid.
Yes.
You know?
People that look like me, you know, it's an effervescent statement that we all must allow to bubble up to the surface, because no matter what situation you're in, when you're with people that look like you and people that you can relate to in that community, it's important on every level of our lives. It's important on every single level of our lives. And so what that immediately wants me to transition to is community. And I think it's probably, I'm going to guess, I'm going to speak for you a minute about why you wrote your books, because you wanted to serve that community, people who look like me, people who I can go to and without saying a word, they know, right? So Melody, you've authored actually two books, which is really cool, because what I'm thinking is like, you weren't even like waiting for the first one to get published and you're like, I know what the second one has to be. Can you talk to us a little bit about this community that you felt as though you needed to tap into, you needed to show them, people who look like me?
Absolutely. So the cancer community is large, but a lot of people don't connect. So I wanted to make some sort of a connection. And basically, this book that I've created is what I've been doing my entire life. When I was a survivor at a young age, people would reach out to my family. What did you guys do? What was her treatment? How did it look? You know, who do you recommend? Mm-hmm. People are always looking for hope and they're always looking for community. So my mom was fielding phone calls left and right after I survived. So we had this big group of people that looked to me for hope. And so I was thinking, you know, what about people that are newly diagnosed and they feel hopeless? And I was diagnosed before social media. So now people are able to kind of go on to Instagram and hashtag cancer survivor and be able to find people. And what my hope is that they're able to find my company, Luna Peak Foundation, which is the nonprofit that we're releasing these books under. Our community is all cancer survivors that are willing to share their story for newly diagnosed patients to feel good about themselves and to feel like, wow, I can be that person. Beyond Remission, Words of Advice for Thriving, my niece and I, we collected people from social media, we collected my friends and family members and anybody that had been touched by cancer and asked them to come out to a studio and help us out. So we just took their photos and interviewed them, and we took their best quotes. So basically it's a photo of a survivor and their quote of advice. So it's their words of advice for you to thrive through your diagnosis and on your way to survival. So that's what Beyond Remission is about, is just creating this community for people that don't have it. So we want to donate these books to hospitals, waiting rooms. You know, you get your diagnosis, you walk out and somebody hands you this book and you get to see 114 survivors in one space and all their wonderful words.
That's beautiful. And I'm now really understanding the connection. So not everybody survives cancer, right? You know, death is something that we do not really talk about as a society, but yet it's the one thing that's for sure. You know, how we're going to all get there, we don't know, but we all will arrive someday at death's door. So let me talk a little bit about Beyond Grief. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So, you know, some people think it's so morbid and don't talk about death, and they don't know what to say to somebody when they've lost somebody close to them. My niece, Gracelyn Bateman, she really has pushed us to do these books. Like, she is the driving force, a brilliant young lady. And I feel like I had to wait for her to grow up in order to share my story. So she's really pushed me. And I was 12 when she was born. So we're almost like sisters, more like sisters than a niece and aunt team. Her father passed away suddenly, and she was living in New York at the time. She's moved back to California to be with the family. It was horrific because he was so young, so healthy. It wasn't expected. And it's forced all of us to face death. And, you know, my kids were young when it happened. So everybody in our family has kind of like surrounded her and giving her love and trying to help her through it. And Beyond Grief helped her through that. So we've interviewed people that have faced life-changing loss. And not everybody has faced it. So, you know, we talked to people that have lost children, lost parents, lost husbands, wives, and they're sharing their story of hope. So when somebody is newly grieving and you don't know what to send them, you can send them this book, you know, because flowers die and you don't want to send flowers. So, you know, so they get to see, and it's a quick read. Like, we don't want it to be heavy. We want them to see the eyes of a grief survivor and what helped them through their darkest days.
Yeah, that's, it's so beautiful and important and so not talked about. Like you said, I mean, really, what do you say to someone? It's probably, I bet it's probably one of the most Googled things. Like, what do I say to someone when they lost someone they love? It's a very courageous and beautiful thing that you and your niece have done, because we have to celebrate life, even if it's a short life. You know, there's this beacon of light, right? If we could get spiritual or enlightened just from a universal standpoint, everything happens for a reason, right? We're supposed to go through struggles for a reason. It's really easy to say. It's really hard when you're on the receiving end of that struggle. I know my son Jack sometimes, you know, with all of his challenges, sometimes feels like the world is against him. Not only did you survive your own challenges in life, but then you went on to have not one, but two children who appeared on the spectrum. And so you've been dealing with autism and the big, vast black hole that that potentially is. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, when life doesn't seem so fair.
Right. I think because I was a cancer survivor, I don't ever look at it as being unfair. You know, life is what it is, and everybody that you meet has some sort of challenge. If I compared my challenges to other people, I could be like, oh, my cancer was worse than your cancer. There's a hierarchy of cancer patients, or, you know, you didn't have 3 years of chemo, you only had one. And if you start doing that, you start getting bitter, and I don't want to be bitter. So it's just, I try to look at it as everybody's threshold of what they can handle is what they're given. And I've been given a lot. And I kind of say, you know, I just keep swimming. You know, I keep getting hit with waves, but I just keep swimming through those waves. And luckily, I'm a strong swimmer. So just be strong through whatever is handed to you. So yeah, I do. I have two children that were diagnosed with autism. I've been fortunate that they are really strong kids and that I'm willing to study and learn how to help them. They are high functioning. They're what used to be called Asperger's, but they got rid of that title. So they're on this big spectrum of autism. So mostly it's like sensory processing issues, some anxiety, and some of the social cues that aren't easy for other kids. And I have three sons, and it's interesting because my middle boy does not have any autism or any spectrum thing. So he's like right in the middle of my two little bookends. But they're great kids. And at first it was very scary and it was very hard. And you think, you know, like you with your son, you think it's not fair. But then I realized, you know, neuronormal kids have issues too. You know, you have to look at what is great about what they have and what strength do they pull from that. And so, you know, my kids have a lot of intelligence. They're very bright kids. And so even though sounds are louder and smells are louder and tastes are difficult for them, they don't like textures, but they're bright and they can focus on one thing and be really, really good at that one thing. So I try to focus on what are the strengths. So I always try to look for the bright side of things. I'm always try to be positive. And I feel like that's what challenges bring to you. And I feel like that's what you have as well.
You're right. You do find really amazing pockets of joy, hope, exhilaration in the upswings, right? In life. You know, the downswings only make the upswings that much more sweet and joyful. And what I like to say about some of the children that I know that, you know, appear on the spectrum and to the parents that, you know, have those beautiful children is everything's bigger. You know, the noise is bigger, the anxiety is bigger, but the heart's also bigger and the brain's also bigger when it comes to perception. Really, I love that you said that. You know what I mean? And when you start to, well, there's an old adage, you throw your problems in a circle and you run home with your own.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, we all have. And so I love that you said, like, quit looking over your shoulder to see where you are in the race. You know what I mean? And right. Just be in the race.
Yeah.
You took your challenges, you know, what my friend Eric likes to call the adversity advantage, and you rolled it up into a ball and you fucking shot that thing down the bowling alley, you know, and then you knocked all the pins out with it.
Absolutely.
And that's courage. That's brevity. That's courage. And that's surviving. That is celebrating life and surviving life at the same time, because we're all going to get knocked down. It's just how you get back up.
Yes.
Now, let's talk a little bit about your husband when it comes to someone who took matters into his own hands and said, I want to do something with that. Now, you guys fell in love at a very young age. And let's talk about how you empowered his whole career, really.
Yeah. You know, Tom and I met when we were lifeguarding. We lived in the same small little town, Sierra Madre, California. It's a little tiny mountain town. But we never knew each other because we went to different schools. So we met at this yeah. at the pool. It's so funny because it feels like the water's always surrounding my life. He knew he wanted to be a doctor. He just didn't know what kind of doctor he wanted to be. And for his senior project, he asked if he could follow my doctor around. And Dr. Rosen at City of Hope became a family friend. He became very, very close to our family. So we asked him for a favor. You know, can this teenager follow you around for one day and see your patients with you? And that made Tom fall in love with oncology. When he went on to medical school at UCLA, that's what he focused on, was oncology. And he actually wound up doing his fellowship at UCLA and City of Hope. So he was walking the same halls that I was treated in. It was like I came full circle. It was so amazing to see him there. And so now he's an oncologist at Torrance Memorial Hunt's Cancer Center out here in California. And his group is just an amazing group of men and women that just want to take care of people and just want to help. Not only, they don't want to just help them survive their health, they want to help them survive mentally also and be yes. able to, you know, live a full life and have that positivity. And I feel like I inspired that as well.
I'm sure that you did, because, I know that you did. I'm certain that you did, because, you know, I've had many doctors and experiences with doctors with Jax's, you know, many plethora, you know, of from his liver transplant at 6 months old to, you know, ongoing chronic lung disease, blah, 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 hearing loss, psoriasis, allergies, lots of issues. And we've sat in front of many doctors, and much like you, you know, at an early age, I learned that I didn't have to put up with a doctor that I didn't think was the full package for my son. Like, give your husband, Tom, some accolades and a pat on his back about being a fully integrated doctor, you know, a rounded doctor that's not only treating the disease, but he's treating the patient, the person, mm-hmm. the family, the parents. Like you said, when we started this podcast, we all get hit. We all get banged up when something like this happens in a family. And, you know, I want to take that opportunity to talk a little bit about the City of Hope. So I had the unbelievable pleasure of getting to know the City of Hope through their Spirit of Life Award. I was awarded the Spirit of Life Award by the City of Hope, along with Kathy Lee Gifford and Christian Chenoweth. It was a highlight of my life. And why it was the highlight of my life was because I got to raise funds for a hospital and a project that really put the money right in the patient's hands, so to speak.
It's a wonderful place. And I was treated at, you know, in Duarte, California. I think that's the campus that you got to tour. And something they say is if I don't know exactly the quote, but it's something about like healing the body is not as important as also healing the soul. Yes. So it's like a whole environment there. And I actually wound up naming my oldest son after my doctor. So that's how close we were to City of Hope. It's a beautiful place. Patients don't have to pay out of pocket if they can't. So that's what was so wonderful about what you did, raising funds for that. So there are patients, if they can't pay their copay or they can't pay, City of Hope will still take you. So that's what's wonderful about that hospital.
Yeah.
When I was young, I was very outspoken and I was willing to share my story. I was willing to talk to anybody. I was that little kid that would like run up to you and talk to you, even if you didn't know who I was. So City of Hope took advantage of that personality that I had and would fly me out nationally to different places. And I would speak at fundraisers and I would speak at events to raise more money. I was the youngest of five kids and we didn't have a lot of money growing up. So we couldn't give a lot of money to City of Hope, but I could give myself.
Yes.
So I could give my voice. And so that's what we did. And they flew me to Vegas, Chicago, like all over the place. And in Chicago is when I gave the Spirit of Life Award out. And I was 12, so I got to hand out the award that you received. It's a huge deal. It's a big honor. I don't know if people know it is only given to the best of the best. So you are incredible. When I read that you received that, I was so excited. I gave it to Arthur Blank, who is one of the founders of Home Depot.
Amazing.
And he gave a lot of money to City of Hope and offered a lot of help. And I just think it's amazing people like you that not only can offer raising money and giving money, but you gave yourself. And, you know, especially giving blood right now is so important. So I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, giving plasma, giving blood, a lot of people aren't doing it right now. And it's needed more than ever. And cancer patients still need it.
Yes.
You know, even though COVID's happening, they still need their transplants. They still need donors. That's of right. Everything. So thank you for doing that. I'm not allowed to, unfortunately.
That's okay. One. We got your back. We got your back. You can't do it all, girl. Yeah, no, I think you make a good point. My mother went through breast cancer treatment during COVID. You know, while the world seems to be on pause, ultimately people dealing with cancer and illnesses and autism and things like that, they're not on pause. Their lives still are going on. So, you know, now is a time to really maybe take some extra time, because one of the things that you said was, you know, giving of yourself. And I have a lot of people that say to me all the time, like, I really don't know how to get involved. You know, I don't have any money to give. I'm barely surviving on my own. And really giving of your own, you know, flesh and blood, your own time, these are things that we really can do. And so please don't forget about the American Red Cross. Don't forget about, you know, your blood drives and plasma drives that are needed. And you're just sometimes your hands. Two hands are needed to cook food. My husband has a food kitchen. You know, we've cooked food for the homebound for years. I really shouldn't say we. He really has done it. So there's always a way to give back, and it's not always financial. Now, let's talk a little bit about healing the soul, you know, as a segue from the City of Hope, because giving back is always a good way to do that. But I find I heal my soul every time I step off into the mountains. I'm a high altitude climber. I've done a lot of adventures in the mountains, and I really find that nature is, in fact, nurture. So you named your organization Luna Peak. Can we talk a little bit about why you arrived at that name and how we can heal the soul through some of what you've learned from, you know, those before you?
Yes. Well, Luna Peak. So it's my niece and I, Gracelyn and I, and Luna, it was kind of, you know, a woman-owned business. Mm-hmm. It's because we wanted to elevate female-owned companies. And we want people to know that we are women that are smart and strong and running this company.
Yes.
So that's where Luna comes from. Peak is just like women reaching their heights and survivors reaching their peak and everybody finding a goal to reach and getting there. Our family is very outdoorsy. And my niece's dad, Chris, he passed away. He's the inspiration behind Beyond Grief. I was in their wedding, my sister and his wedding when I was two. So this is my brother. Like I've grown up with him.
Yes.
So losing him was horrific. But he was a mountain man. So he would climb Mount Baldy, Mount Whitney. They have a place in Mammoth. So they're always, you know, climbing mountains. And so my niece, to honor him, climbed Kilimanjaro after he passed. I feel like we're always to the mountains, water and mountains. Those are our two like happy places. And growing up in a little mountain town as well, we're constantly outdoors. So that's where Luna Peak came from.
You're a true example of that. And I think when you do overcome those sorts of things, there's a joy in life that you can find, a peacefulness that you can find, and know that it's out there, I think is the message. Because yeah, you went through your ebbs and flows, but at a very young age, you garnered this wisdom that's taken people a lifetime to try to figure out how to, you know, exit toxic people from their life, or how to say no, the power of no, not only, you know, yes, and understanding that each second is yours to live and your choice to do with it what you want. It's a really perfect segue to talk a little bit about finding your freedoms. It's something that I talk about in my podcast, and you know, it can mean something different to each person, and it can mean something different for you today than it does tomorrow. But can you give us a little inspiration on how you find your freedom?
Oh gosh, finding my freedom. Definitely just going back to only surrounding myself with wonderful people. Like that really, I draw the line. If somebody starts talking bad about somebody else in front of me, I don't need to hear it. And I'll tell them like, okay, that's, you know, that's your opinion, but you know, let's talk about what our kids did yesterday instead, or let's not whisper in the corner. Let's, you know, if you have something to say to me, say it to me, don't say it to somebody else about me. So, you know, so I think it's really just staying happy with what I have around me and being happy in that moment. And not every moment is perfect. You know, of course we're going to have ups and downs, but I always do try to find the best in every situation. So like, for example, right now, a lot of people are freaking out about their kids going back to school. What are you going to do? How are we going to do this? Yes. And I'm trying to tell people the kids are going to be fine. No matter what you choose, we're going to be fine. I barely went to school for 3 years being sick as a kid. And I turned out fine. Yes. I went to college, you know, I swam in college. I had two majors. Like your kids are going to be okay. 1 year off, we're going to be fine. So I always try to find that attitude. And sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's not easy. You know, like with my first son's diagnosis, I had, you know, nights where I was crying at 1 a.m. researching everything all night. And I'm sure you had similar with Jack's, where you're just like in this mode. Yeah. But then I try to rewind in my mind. So that's where I find my freedom, is always trying to find the best of every situation, even crappy situations. Yes. Just find the best.
It's all going to be okay. It really is all going to be okay. What's meant to be will be, and we're all going to be okay in the end. And that, those are probably some of the most important and simplest words that we can, you know, end on and hang on. Melody, founder of Luna Peak Foundation, survivor, inspiration, mom, powerhouse. I'm so thrilled to have had you on to speak. Can you just tell us where our guests can find you?
Yes, on Instagram, we're Luna Peak Foundation, all together. And then our website is lunapeakfoundation.org.
Amazing. So keep looking for the books. These are ways to cope and find hope, really, in both ways. Thank you so much to my guest, Melody Lomboy-Lowe. Please don't forget to subscribe, share, rate, and review my podcast. And I'll see you again next week. It's Heather Thompson. Thanks.